Up next on the Handy Guys podcast, squirrels, basement carpet, and Brian's falling kitchen cabinets.
Welcome to the Handy Guys podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list. Here are the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
All right, Brian, we got an interesting show tonight, and we're going to be talking, as we mentioned, about several different issues, not really closely related when you're talking about squirrels and carpets and your kitchen cabinets that are falling down. But there is one thing in common.
What?
We recently had Groundhog Day, and that happens in Pennsylvania, right? Punxsutawney Phil.
That's right, February 2nd.
And did he see a shadow?
I don't know.
I believe he did. So we have six more weeks of winter, and we got a question about a squirrel.
Yes, we did.
Was that in Pennsylvania? I don't think so.
He didn't say where he was from, but Larry wrote us a question about a squirrel.
So Punxsutawney Phil saw a shadow, and Larry has problems with squirrels.
That's right.
So I don't know how we can tie them together, but we are. So enjoy your winter. We've been talking about heating your garage, and we may talk a little bit more about that in a couple of weeks. We got a good comment about that. And I want to deal with this question today after we hand out our contact information, all that. I haven't forgotten, Brian.
Okay.
This is an interesting one. We got this question about squirrels chewing the fascia boards or the...
I'll read the question when we get to it.
Okay.
Yeah, trying to get
really
into the attic.
It's an interesting one. They're trying to get in. And I know a lot of people have problems with squirrels for some reason or another, getting into attics, getting into bird feeders, chewing parts of their house.
Sure.
And we're going to talk about some solutions for that. And also carpet. We had a question about basement carpeting and what are your options. We've done a lot on basements. We don't want to talk a whole bunch more about basements because we've covered it, right? You can check out our basement series right on thehandyguyspodcast.com. But we're still going to do one more thing, carpeting, because that's a biggie
for
a basement. And if we have time, in addition, we're going to talk about, what was our third? Your cabinets, your kitchen cabinets, which are...
Right.
Your quality kitchen cabinets that are falling off the wall, right?
Right, and I think it might be user error. We'll get into that.
All right, well, we'll do all of this right after. Well, let's provide the contact information.
All right, well, you can always contact us via our website at handyguyspodcast.com. Just fill out the contact form, and that sends us an email. Or you can just email us directly, us at handyguyspodcast.com, or use the call me button on the homepage.
Okay.
It's time for listener questions with the Handy Guy.
All right, Brian, so where do you want to start? We want to look at the squirrel situation first, or start with carpets?
Let's talk about squirrels first, because maybe we won't get to the carpets or what I was working on last week.
So why don't you read the listener question that we received, and this is from one of our listeners. This is Larry, correct?
Yes, so Larry wrote us, and he says, "Hi, I have squirrels eating away at the lead pipe flashing that surrounds the PVC vents that extend out his roof and also along some fascia boards. In addition to searching for a solution, one person said they may be missing a mineral in their diet. Another said they chew to keep their teeth from growing too long. So any truth to these? Any idea why they're eating the lead pipe flashing? How can I stop them permanently from eating the flashing and the fascia boards? How can I repair the flashing without buying an entirely new, he calls it a roof jack, but how do I do this without buying a new one of those and lifting the shingles up?"
So this is the metal flashing is sometimes
right. It's
lead.
Usually metal. Yeah, the newer ones are a piece of metal flashing with a rubber boot that fits down around that pipe.
Right, okay.
And they'll go up underneath the shingles above that vent pipe that's coming through the roof. And they're very easy to install. So,
Are they really lead or just the older ones are lead?
Old ones were lead, but usually those would be around a cast iron pipe, not PVC. So I'm not sure exactly what Larry has, but... Larry, those you can get those rubber boot flashing things for a couple of bucks at the home center,
right.
And they really are easy to install. So don't worry about that. But let's talk mainly about the squirrels here, Paul.
Well, Brian, you know, I'm not really into animals that much. I mean, Punxsutawney Phil and stuff like that.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, I'm not sure I know anything about the average diet of a local squirrel. Do you?
Right. I don't think they're trying to eat lead.
Don't they like nuts?
Yeah. And peanut butter is, I understand they like peanut butter
really?
A lot. But yeah, they eat nuts and berries and, you know, whatever. But they're not eating your roof, Larry, to get minerals in their diet, I don't think. And
well, do we really know? I mean, have you checked with a squirrel?
No, I haven't checked with
a squirrel.
I mean,
it's possible that the doctor wanted, you know, maybe they weren't getting enough roughage in their diet.
Yeah,
I don't enough know. Metals or iron content.
That's
and
right.
Lead content.
And I don't think they're chewing on it to keep their teeth from getting long. I have a theory, Paul.
To keep them from getting long?
Yeah, to keep their teeth from getting too long. They're gnawing on the
on
the flashing so that their teeth don't get too long.
Yeah, but lead, if that was the case, wouldn't they pick a different material? I mean, lead's pretty soft. Would it really help with the squirrel teeth issue?
I think both of those are red herrings, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't the squirrel, I mean, they could either maybe find, you know, good hard,
like
hard, some hardwood or
on
some...
On the curb.
Just some
or
concrete.
A rock.
Yeah, a rock.
They're not going to do that.
So, a street sign.
So what's your theory? Why are these squirrels chewing on the flashing around his vent pipe, and why are they chewing on the fascia board? Do you have any theories on that, Paul?
Yeah, I think that they're just, you know, just bored.
You think they're bored?
Yeah, I think they're loitering.
They're
adolescent squirrels, and they have
nothing better. They're troublemaking squirrels.
Yeah, they're just troubleshooting.
Okay. Well, my theory is, since it's wintertime, that they're trying to get into the attic to build a nest to stay warm. And that's where they feel the warmth, perhaps, coming out of the attic.
Isn't that a little late? Aren't they a little late for that? Shouldn't they be doing that in about September, October?
Yeah, I would think normally, because they're not usually that active this time of year, because of the cold, they're usually in their nests. Maybe something happened to their nest.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're trying to get into the attic for some reason.
Interesting theory there.
That's my theory. Yeah.
Maybe we need to do an episode of Nova or something on PBS and investigate this squirrel intrusion.
But I think the real question is not why are they getting in, but how do we keep them from continuing to try to get in and damaging the house, right? That's really the question we need to answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be part of it. Maybe some maybe an investigation into the DNA of the squirrel would be helpful as well.
You think the DNA analysis?
Maybe we'll see that they come from a long line of of lead chewers.
Yeah, could be. So, Larry, I would suggest you begin a squirrel elimination program at your house.
Wait a minute, Brian. Now, I know that they used to use the lead on the around those pipes, but they don't any longer use those materials typically. And it's the same in the same vein. They don't usually allow you to just eliminate the squirrels anymore, you know, with a shotgun or a BB gun or tool. In the old days, that was just perfectly acceptable to walk out if you had a squirrel problem and you just take them out of action. Is that what you're suggesting?
Did not suggest that to Larry I emailed him.
Oh, good.
I said...
After all, aren't squirrels people too?
Squirrels are not people. They are rats. They are rats with furry tails. That's what they are.
Yeah.
So they are not people too.
A friendly rodent. No, these are not rodents.
Killing them is not usually an option in most neighborhoods in most parts of the country anymore.
Yeah, but we still may have some listeners in West Virginia, so that, you know, your local rules may apply.
Your local rules may definitely apply, but I can tell you from firsthand experience, squirrels are not that easy to kill.
Okay. Well,
Shotguns will do nicely, but
also wipe out part of your house.
BB guns are not very effective on squirrels unless
they
you're
off.
At close range.
Yeah.
They'll bounce off and they'll tick off the squirrel. So what I recommended to Larry was a trapping program, and you can get for about $35, you can get a have a heart trap, a live trap. And I know, you know, if you read the comments on the Have a Heart trap at the Handy Guys podcast Amazon store, all the people that have used these, one guy said he got 27 squirrels over the course of a month, relocated them away from his house, and he no longer has a squirrel problem. So...
It does help. I know, I think Larry suggested if he removes squirrels, other ones will come in. but they don't always necessarily have the same habits as the previous squirrels you have relocated.
That's right. They're living in different trees. They're doing different things.
I have someone who's very close to me and my family, namely my father, who would relocate the squirrels that were getting into the bird feeder.
Okay.
And he relocated them to a local park, maybe only a mile or so away, and sometimes labeled them. So you knew if they would come back with spray paint.
You take a spray paint, you spray paint the tail, right?
And it does take a lot of work. I mean, you got to keep up with it because there could be a whole like colony of squirrels that have learned to get in your bird feeder. But in time, there is some success there. Now, the new squirrels that move into town will eventually also learn possibly to get on that bird feeder, but he did have some success with it. So I wouldn't just assume that the new squirrels moving in will automatically start chewing on lead.
Right, exactly. That's kind of an odd thing. So if you can get the couple of squirrels that are doing that, and and maybe a half a dozen more while you're at it, I think you'll be pretty good to go. But there are also chemical repellents that you can put on, that have, there's fox urine that you can spray on there, actually, or I don't know if it's synthetic or real, but the squirrels smell that and they don't want to be anywhere near a fox, so they stay away.
But wouldn't that just wash off with rain?
It does. So it's only going to last about a month, and then you're going to need to reapply it. And if those squirrels are really anxious to get in your attic for some reason, they may be back. So they have it in granular form. That might not work so well in a attic, though. That works well in a garden, or it may not work well on a roof. So, but I sent Larry a couple of links to these things, and he can try some different things.
Okay.
The other suggestion I had for Larry was to trim the trees. Don't give them an easy avenue on.
But that's hard because those squirrels, they can jump so far. They can climb right up the house.
And you've got power lines probably coming over to the house and things like that.
They're clever.
But if you can trim the trees and, prevent them from getting on the roof in the first place, that would go a long way.
All right. And as far as if you want to, you look for the have a heart traps, which are very effective. What do you use as bait there? Do you just put some lead in there?
Maybe in Larry's case, some lead.
Or bird seed something like that.
No, peanut butter. Peanut butter sandwich. So you just you put some peanut butter on a piece of bread and you stick it right there onto the trigger mechanism on the trap. And I read also you spread a little bit on the bottom of the trip lever for the trap so that they'll spend a lot of time there and till the thing trips and traps them, and then off you go.
All right. Well, let us know how it works out, and hopefully you can eradicate your squirrel problem.
Your rats with furry tails problem.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Up next, we're going to talk about basement carpet.
Want great deals on tools that the handy guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
Okay, Brian, we got a question, another listener question about basement carpets. And, well, it's an important question because, Brian, even if you have the best and driest basement in the world, all the water, any water in the house that leaks anywhere ends up in the basement.
Right. So if you have an overflowing toilet or, a busted pipe or something like that.
So it's the basement carpets seem to get damaged almost no matter how hard you try.
Right.
So you do need to think carefully about what kind of carpet, if any, you're going to put in a finished basement. But what's the question we got here?
Okay. We got this question from Eric. He says, first off, I want to say great site and great information. Here's my situation. Carpet in the basement. My wife and I are nearly done with our basement project and ready to pick out some carpet to put in. We have no idea how to buy carpet or what sort of padding is best to put under the carpet. Our basement is solid poured concrete floor. We have no water or moisture to really mention. A small dehumidifier occasionally runs. The basement seems dry.
Right.
We have three kids and a big dog. Would like a carpet and padding that would be able to hold up. Thanks, Eric.
So again, getting back to the original question, no matter how dry, how good your basement is, water there's a good chance water will end up there.
Someday,
so
perhaps.
You don't want to go out and get the nicest carpet you can buy, in my opinion. In fact, you don't need to get expensive carpet for it to look nice. You need to think about traffic, obviously. Typically, a basement traffic is not extensive because,
right.
you know, it's not...
It's not going to be a high wear area. Right. It's not like your front hallway.
Right. So, as far as the carpet goes, I would get... and we can talk about the padding and what you put underneath the carpet. But in my opinion, if you're going to get a typical indoor carpet, then you want to get one of the cheaper quality Berber or, you know, a cheaper carpet per square
like
foot.
Yeah.
It can be somewhat plush, but you just want it, you don't want to go high end. You want to go.
Yeah, like those, you know, Saxony velour carpet things, you know, like you might put in a master bedroom.
Yeah.
Might not be the best
right.
choice for a basement. If there ever was a problem.
Exactly.
Now, in a multi-million dollar house, yeah, you know, sure, why not? But, you know, I put in a relatively inexpensive Berber carpet. You put in a relatively inexpensive plush carpet. And when I put my carpet in, my pad was actually more expensive than my carpet on a per square foot basis.
Right. And that's often how it is. You do want to be careful about the pad and also careful about your water. If you leave your house, turn your water off. That's what I do all the time, you know.
That's right. We talk about that on past shows.
Many times, and I keep hearing news stories weekly almost of someone having some sort of leak. But
right.
anyway, the pad you want to think a lot about. Because you don't want it breeding mold, mildew.
Exactly. If it gets moist.
Whatever.
So there are pads that are made or marketed specifically for basement on grade or on concrete application.
Right.
They're a tighter closed cell foam. So they're much more durable. They're not as cushy, perhaps,
right.
but they are much better. For basements.
And your carpet installers are going to know about that. They're going
That's
to have...
right. Maybe not the home center guys.
Right.
right. But go to a carpet,
right.
you know, a specialty retailer, someone that's been around a long time.
If the home center guys have to go to somebody to get it installed anyway, so you might as well just go right to a place that installs
right.
and sells it.
And find the oldest guy that works there,
yeah.
right? Because he's going
right.
to know the most about
right.
about your options.
Now, that's the traditional method, right? You do a pad and carpet. However,
that's
there are some alternatives. One is simply the Roger German method. When he in the basement book that we talked about earlier on in our podcast career, and that is simply to go out and get cheap commercial carpets.
That's right.
That
and
just go on the floor.
I know. I have a friend that did that in his basement, and those have a pad built into
right.
them. They're designed to go right on concrete. That pad is impervious to water, so it serves as a moisture barrier as well.
The carpet is cheap.
The carpet is cheap.
You can even install it yourself if you want to do it.
If you want to do it yourself, you can. But it just rolls out. You know, if you have seams and steps and stuff like that, have a professional
yeah.
do it. But it is very inexpensive. It's very durable, and it can look good. And
It looks nice. It actually looks decent, but, you know, it is going to be hard.
right. It's not going to be soft and cushy. So if you got a lot of kids, you know, if you're using it as a playroom for a two-year-old, maybe you want a little more padding. But yeah, it's a good option.
And what about the other option? I see more and more they're getting a little bit fancier on flooring like they do with walls where they're putting up, you know, a foam insulation. They're starting to do that like extruded polyester. What is it? XPS.
Right. Extruded polystyrene.
Yeah. Thank you. They're starting to put that on the floor first.
That's
like
right.
A 1-inch layer.
Right. I saw a recent...
acts as a vapor barrier.
I saw a recent installation where... they used 1-inch XPS, it's that pink foam stuff, right on the floor. They taped all of the seams, so it serves as a vapor barrier.
Right.
Butted up against the wall, they used the XPS insulation system, which we've talked about on previous shows. We won't get into that today, but in the walls. And then on top of that, they put 5/8 plywood, used TAPCONs, which are a screw that goes into concrete, to hold that plywood down to the XPS foam, and then carpeted and padded over that. So that gives a thermal break between the concrete and the carpet. So part of the thinking there, Paul, is that the concrete is cold. right?
Sure.
So a good pad is going to help that concrete from not feeling cold. But also, if you have cold concrete and a warm room on a humid day, you get moisture. Not because you've got groundwater or it's raining or anything like that, but moisture can condense on that cold surface. Just like when you take a beer out of the refrigerator, you know, you get that moisture on the side of the
Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll mind if I go get a beer out of the refrigerator?
Go, get me one.
All right.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
For you.
No, it's not happy.
So last week we talked about the channel lock model 412 locking plier.
There we go.
And we said we would report back when we first used it.
There we go. It works. All right, cool.
All right. Well, thank you for the beer, Paul.
All right. So you were talking about the condensation. Now, there's also other extravagant solutions. There's the flooring, subfloor with a dimpling and things like that.
Right.
But I like the foam one. I wish I had done that. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But
it
what
does.
About you're adding an inch plus you have the plywood.
So you're adding 5/8 Yeah.
And so that last step on your steps is going to be a little shorter than, but it's not too bad.
It is. It is going to be a little, it might feel a little funny when you're coming down the steps. Absolutely right. Unless you reposition the steps, change the rise and the run, and, you know, but that's, you're not going to do that most likely.
I don't know. That makes a lot of sense. Maybe I'll just pull up my carpet, do it again. Nah, it'd be too much work, but I like that idea. But, you know, still, again, it seems to me that even if you have the driest basement, there's just as good a chance of water coming from above as it is from below. So,
We talked a week or two ago about potential for burst pipes because of high water pressure.
Right.
So if that happens, you know, when you're away, it won't happen to you because you turn your water off before you go away. I don't.
You should.
Well, Eric, let me give you one more tip.
What's that?
On this. Test your basement first for moisture. And how do you do that? We've talked about this in the past.
The old Saran wrap deal.
Exactly. So. Just take a piece of Saran wrap, put it down on your basement floor, get some duct tape, and tape it down for a couple of days and look. And if there's moisture underneath that between the concrete and that Saran wrap, you want to think twice about carpeting that basement and consider some kind of water mediation or crank up that dehumidifier. If there's moisture on top of it, that means it's humidity from your room.
Okay.
So take a look and see. If it's dry on both sides, you're probably good to go.
Yeah, the one thing I like about modern homes, in the summertime at least, it used to be, you know, it was always humid in the basement and you had to run your dehumidifier. I find that with central air, even if I don't have the vents open in the basement, I get enough air coming down the steps or whatever that it keeps the basement dry.
Yeah.
You know, assuming I'm running central air, and we do fairly often as soon as it gets hot, that I don't have any moisture problems in the summer.
Yeah, I've, you know, we live in the same area of the country, Paul, so obviously, and I've had the same experience as you. I haven't had any moisture problems, so.
All right. Well, that's it for carpets. Thanks for the question, and hopefully we've provided some ideas for you. Up next, we're going to talk about Brian's kitchen cabinets.
Don't know where to get reliable answers for your do-it-yourself projects? Why not search the Handy Guys Archive at handyguyspodcast.com.
All right, this next segment is called What Are You Doing Lately? Now, Brian, this is a What Are You Doing Lately segment for you because you've had to do some repairs in your kitchen. Your kitchen cabinets are coming off the walls. Explain.
Well, when you take 10,000 pounds of cookbooks and cast iron pots and put them all in the same cabinet.
Cast iron, huh? Well,
I don't know. Whatever they are, they're heavy. You potentially can run into problems when you overload a cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
When you install an upper cabinet.
Did you install these cabinets?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I did not install these cabinets. They are a decent quality cabinet, but they are attached with screws through the back of the cabinet, through the drywall, and into the studs.
Pretty typical.
Very typical.
So are washers on the screws holding the back of the cabinet?
In this case, there's not.
Okay.
They're a wide wide head screw, so there was no additional washer. But the so there's two screws at the top and two screws at the bottom, four screws holding a 4 foot wide cabinet, upper cabinet in. So the problem when the cabinet was overloaded, Paul, is the back of the cabinet, which is plywood, started to pull away from the carcass of the cabinet at the top because of the weight tilt, kind of pulling it forward and away from the wall.
Okay.
So the screws held, but the back of the cabinet started coming away from the carcass of the cabinet. Bad news.
Well, not good.
No. So I decided I had two options to remedy the situation, or three. One would be to call the cabinet manufacturer and complain, have them come out and replace my cabinets.
Not going to happen.
They got a 25-year warranty.
Oh, really?
These cabinets do, yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. But I didn't want them to come crashing down before I actually embarked on this. And now they may listen to this podcast and say, uh-oh, they overloaded the cabinets. We're not going to cover them under warranty.
Well, the fact is they probably weren't going to cover – they weren't going to replace them. They were going to just try to repair them anyway.
Right. And the cabinet manufacturer, by the way, Paul, follows us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I think they listen to the show.
So the question, though, I wonder is if – is you know, anytime you have a failure, a structural failure like this in the house – you know, there's three possibilities. One, there's a defect in the design, a defect in the materials, or a defect in the installation.
Right.
And I'm wondering which of those it was.
I think it was either design or materials in this case. I think they were installed, you know, standard practice. They're installed how I would have installed them, how I've installed cabinets in the past, and how, you know, everybody installs cabinets. So the back of the cabinet was attached to the carcass of the cabinet with glue and staples. And they pulled out. Those staples pulled out and that glue did not hold. So either insufficient glue, defective glue, because the staples alone won't hold that back to the cabinet.
Okay.
So I think there was a failure in that glue. And it looks like there was barely any glue on there. So I think they might have had a,
and
I don't know.
It was just one cabinet that did this, or is there more than one?
They're all doing it. Really? One cabinet where it had pulled back almost an inch away from the wall.
Okay. So what's your solution?
So what I did, I actually have soffits above the cabinet, and that soffit is made with two-by framing with drywall over it. So I was able to actually jack that cabinet back into place, make it level and plumb, and then put some additional screws through the carcass of the cabinet into the wood framing of that soffit to hold it in place. So that's kind of my temporary fix until I get either a replacement cabinet or a repaired cabinet.
Or until the soffit starts coming down.
Or until the soffit starts coming down. Thanks, Paul.
All right, cool.
So that's my, but yeah, good quality cabinets. They're all solid wood construction or plywood with plywood backs, plywood veneer on the sides. No particle board or anything like that. Dovetail drawers. I mean, it's what you would consider a...
Right.
You know, mid to upper range cabinet. They weren't hand built, you know, in place, but they're it's a good cabinet.
All right. Maybe you should consider Tupperware for those cabinets.
You know, that might be a good idea. So we've cleaned out some of those cookbooks and moved some stuff around to minimize the weight.
All right. Well, at least you got the situation under control. And there you have it. Squirrels, carpet, and Brian's falling cabinets on this week's edition of the Handy Guys podcast. Thanks for checking us out, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.